Welcome to the Soulcast. This is a special Charlottesville edition of the Soulcast, where we're going to just really go in depth about what happened this weekend. For those who don't know, there was a huge white supremacist and Nazi rally in Charlottesville this weekend called Unite the Right. And as many people know, there was this Nazi who drove into a crowd of anti-fascists, killing one woman named Heather Heyer and critically injuring 19 others. For this entire weekend, Pat and Wendy were on the ground out there covering this event for Unicorn Riot. And so we're just going to talk about what they saw, what they experienced, you know, and get some kind of background to what's really going on. These two are founding members of the Unicorn Riot Collective, or it's actually a nonprofit. And Unicorn Riot is an incredible news outlet. Wherever this shit going down, they go out there, they put their fucking bodies on the line, getting arrested, pepper sprayed, beaten, and in this case, risking their lives. So support the work of Unicorn Riot. These people are my good friends. And yeah, you know, to everybody who was out there in Charlottesville this weekend resisting fascism, you know, I just want to say thank you and much respect and solidarity. And, you know, to the fascists, like Woody Guthrie said, you are bound to lose. Pat and Wendy from Unicorn Riot, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Hello. You just got back from Charlottesville.
We did.
How are y'all feeling right now? How are you processing?
It's definitely rough. Can't lie about that. Like, at work today, I was having some, like, physical symptoms of emotional shock, I guess I would call it. Just, like, my throat going dry, and I started to get real shaky, so engaging in a lot of self-care. You know, nothing compared to what a lot of people have been through over the weekend, but definitely feeling it, and then just processing and getting articles out and getting more information out.
Yeah, I feel also pretty weird, still pretty stressed out. I haven't fully processed, I think, everything that went on. And we've just still been trying to get as much information and media out about the situation still. So for us, the smoke hasn't really quite cleared yet.
Right. So just for folks who don't know, you're Pat and Wendy, you're with Unicorn Riot, you're based out of Denver. And since y'all went out there and were out there for the whole weekend, I thought it would be a opportunity for us to just hang out and talk about what Charlottesville was like, what y'all saw, what you experienced. When you've been preparing for this and thinking about this for about a month, getting ready to go out there, what did you think you were walking into?
So what I thought I was walking into is I thought that this would be a similar situation to Pikeville or even some of the confrontations that have happened here in Denver.
What happened in Pikeville, for those who don't know?
Why don't you talk about that?
Well, yeah, I was there, and there was a planned white nationalist rally in the town of Pikeville by the Traditional Worker Party, Matthew Heimbach, and it was, you know, supposed to be this family event, but really, you know, everyone knew what was really going to happen. And there was an ordinance, I think the day before, that no masks were allowed. They blocked off the entire city. They cordoned off the actual neo-Nazis and white nationalists and white supremacists. And then they formed a police line in between the two groups, with each cop was facing off a different direction. And so there was this sort of, like, equal watch on both sides. And they really just kept the groups apart. It was a much smaller event. And so from that, there was kind of like a wondering of, like, is it going to be similar to that? Are they just going to keep these groups separate? But then as we were driving in, we got some direct information regarding some documents about the planning. And we found out there was going to be a torchlit march on the UVA campus that was supposed to be a secret event, but it had gotten leaked, and from there we knew we were going to be, instead of rolling in to stay at the hotel and kind of prep, we were rolling into a KKK march, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just thought, like, you know, like Pikeville or, like, some of the things that have happened in Denver and other cities, that what was going to happen was, you know, there'd be some screaming and some Zeke-hiling, maybe a few fist fights, and the cops were mostly going to keep people separate. So that's what I, that's kind of what I thought was going to happen.
And so Friday night, you get out, get off the plane and just head straight to this Klan rally with no masks. And, you know, from watching your footage online, and I was watching Revolutionary Z's footage, who y'all were rolling with, because I kept seeing y'all in the footage. I was like, those motherfucking homies. But I was just so scared for y'all, just seeing this endless line of fucking torches, and then Chris is running up on them, you know, asking them questions like, what was... like, what was it like to be there for that? Like, what was that shit like?
Well, so when we first showed up, we got there, and there was only maybe about 30 Nazis in this field, basically, on the campus. And then more kept coming, and more kept coming and trickling in. And then just more of them showed up, and then all of a sudden, like, one of them had a drone. So the Nazis actually had their own drone. They were flying around. And they just kept gathering and gathering, and then another one of our reporters, Chris, started basically giving a line of questioning, asking Jason Kessler what white genocide was over and over again, and I guess he really doesn't like being asked that question, and never really gave us a clear answer on exactly what that means. They definitely pushed me and some other people for that, and yeah, I don't know. So it was, the beginning was weird.
Yeah, definitely. It was, I mean, it was surprising from the start that there was absolutely no security or police presence. Not that I particularly find that to bring any safety. Of course, it brings the opposite. But at the same time, it was surprising. It was just to note, normally in situations I've been in like that, when a large mob is gathering
with torches,
usually there's a police presence. It's just something that was just noticeably absent. And so I at some point decided we didn't have even pairs, so we decided to split up, and I decided to buddy up with Chris. We've rolled together a lot in a lot of different circumstances, so I felt very confident in that. And also I was taking photographs, so it's like he was live streaming, I was photographing. And at one point, you know, this march started snaking through the campus, and I realized we were getting deeper into these sort of winding streets and such in the campus, and I realized there's, like, no public presence here. There's this march, and there's reporters, and I am sort of now a security detail for a live streamer, which isn't really what I expected. I'm also not bad at that. Like, I'm pretty tough. I know my way around things. I lived on the East Coast for a long time. I can take care of myself and someone else, and they were taking care of themselves and me. But it did get intense. I started getting shoved. One of these dudes just screamed at me and called me a fucking bitch, which was okay, what it was. But then, yeah, as we got further in, they were just yelling and shoving Chris's phone out of his hand and shoving me. And then they came up on these steps, and there were these steps descending down to the statue where there was a small ring of students around the statue. And I went straight down to it because I wanted to get a photo of the banner, which I believe was like a UVA Students Against Racism banner. And so I got down there to take a picture of the banner. And I did, and I took a picture, and I was just kind of like, you know, at this point, we were just a little more split up, but it was a more contained situation. So I decided, I like taking photographs, so I was like, oh, this is like, it needs to be an aerial kind of shot. So I looked way up these high steps, and I thought, okay, I can get a shot from up there of this entire thing to show this little tiny ring of students who were holding it down. They were just like chanting, and they weren't going to move, and they were so powerful for this small group. I was just really moved by that. Surrounded by these flaming torches of these like rabid douchebags. So I went to go up the steps, and they started pushing me back into the circle, and I was sort of baffled by it, because it's not because they were behaving badly, but because it just didn't make sense to me. I'm like, I'm not trying to do anything. I'm just trying to move over there, and they're pushing me back into the sink. So, I mean, I completely lost my shit. Like, I defend myself. So I start screaming at them and shoving them back as they were shoving me. And they called me a crazy bitch. One guy tried to trip me. I defended myself. I won't get into how. But eventually I just pushed through. Like, they just, I was like, this isn't going to go down like this. Like, you're not making me stay anywhere. So I pushed through and I got up and started taking photos up at the top. And up there, there were police, maybe about 5 to 10 cops up there. And they were just standing there watching all this, not obviously with orders to do nothing because they didn't move. And then at some point, a real brawl was going down, and then the police from up there all kind of moved in. And then I wasn't in that brawl, though, so...
Yeah, and so... So during the march, and I didn't actually notice that this happened, but we literally had just showed up, and neither of us had ever been in Charlottesville or Virginia, for that matter. But at a certain point, the torch march went by the church where Cornel West was giving a speech. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I know Cornel West talked about it on Democracy Now, but I didn't even realize that that was going on. We were outside, basically, following the torch march. But it was big. I mean, it was 400 or 500 Nazis marching through a campus with tiki torches. And so we marched. I had no idea where we were going. And then we showed up at this statue, and I could see maybe 50 people locked arms around the statue, and 50 might even be almost too many people. It was a slim 50 around the statue. It was hard to tell, but and mostly kids and a lot of POC people there too. And I guess I also found out later the dean of students was also there and showed up with the students. And these Nazis marched down the stairs and basically circled around the statue with their torches, and just basically harassed the kids, Zeke Heiled, yelled things like, "You're anti-white, you will not replace us, Jew will not replace us," and just all kinds of other ridiculous shit. And then eventually just beat these kids up, basically. And there was no cops anywhere. The university of the university there didn't really have any security. I mean, they basically just let these Nazis beat up their own students. And I think that's interesting because Richard Spencer and Jason Kessler are both alumni of the university there in Charlottesville. So I wonder about that. So it was terrible to watch. And they beat people with their torches. We also talked to some people who said that a few of the Nazis actually tried to light people on fire by dumping some of the tiki torch fluid on them and actually light people on fire. But it was definitely 100% on Friday night started by the Nazis. Not that that would really matter who started it, but the Nazis definitely started it and basically just beat up a bunch of kids.
And at that point, the police did kind of rush in, and then they were yelling, like, the march people were yelling, like, "Put out your torches and run." And so they all kind of just put out their torches and started running. I think there was one arrest.
And the Nazis put them out fast. The second the order came down, they put those torches out real fast.
Yep. And then the area was, you know, then there were dispersal orders saying it, you know, unless you're getting medical attention. But yeah, one of the other folks we were with did end up getting hit in the face with a tiki torch. Didn't get burned, but had definitely scraping and bruising on their face, and
damn,
cut their leg too, trying to recover their phone. Actually, after their phone was slammed down, they had to go down and grab it. So
it was just like, from my understanding of it, it's like some press people, 500 Nazis, and like 30 college kids. It's like, what a scene.
Yep.
What the fuck? I don't understand why were they surrounding the statue. What were they going to do there? Are they mad at Jefferson?
I don't really know. I don't really understand the symbolism of that. Like, I didn't have that much information. We just kind of rolled in and started documenting. And then I don't actually have the information on, why it was, what was it about that statue.
Yeah, I don't know if they planned to go to that statue or not. I imagine they did. I'm speculating here, but Thomas Jefferson did own slaves, and so I would imagine that the reason they rallied around that statue was to both A, seem patriotic, and B, celebrate slavery, I guess. But I don't know why they chose that statue. Yeah.
And then so afterwards, your homie gets patched up by the medics. Mm-hmm. You go back to your hotel.
We just started, like, writing and trying to get some media out about that, you know, just basically, like, get a whole post out in...
Up on the Unicorn Riot page, just, like, report back.
And yeah,
because no one was really... people expected it, but no one was really... No one knew.
Yeah, it was... I mean, it was definitely, like, a leaked event. It was supposed to be done completely by surprise by them, but...
Yeah, it turned out to be not so secret.
Yeah.
So, and while... And at our hotel, there were Nazis everywhere. I mean, the hotel we were at was filled with Nazis, basically. And so that was kind of... It was a little unnerving.
Especially as the weekend...
Yeah. We ended up moving hotels
we
after
eventually
Saturday.
Moved hotels,
we,
yeah.
We decided to bounce and get some more secure.
It got to a point where, we were working with Reb Z, and he couldn't come in because there was too many Nazis smoking cigarettes in front of our door. So
you have
to wait, and we're just like, that's it, it's time to go.
At that point, we were hearing, that was Saturday after everything, we were hearing that, you know, from some folks we knew that there were drive-bys happening as well with these white vans going by and just shooting. No one got shot, but once we heard that, we were like, that hotel was like ground floor.
Right.
We'd already been ID'd. We were like, let's get out of here. So yeah, we found a different hotel that was more secure. There were still people from the march at our next hotel, but we were just in a much more secure location.
Did anything ever come out about the drive-bys?
I haven't heard anything
about
that.
And we never got confirmed reports.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of general chatter. And so we could never confirm that drive-bys happened. But what we were hearing...
People we know saw
them. Yeah, no, someone
right.
I know saw them, so I would say
people,
that's confirmed.
People
but
saw
But there
them.
Was nothing else out there, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, so then we stayed, you know, it's so hard. I think this is one of the biggest challenges in terms of, like, you know, this kind of reporting that we're doing is you get back from something like that and I'm pretty amped up. Everyone else is pretty amped up. You're trying to focus, you know, one person's writing, I'm getting ready to edit, texts are blowing, there's so much happening, and at the same time, you know, you're about to go into, like, hell the next day. And you want to get sleep, and you want to, you know, it's like you want to get in a good headspace. And it's just, it's really challenging because there's just so much to do with that. And, you know, to try to find that balance of, like, getting information out there and at the same time getting some rest to go into a difficult situation.
Were there any other, like, mainstream media at the, on the rally, on the Nazi march?
I mean, there were some, because I've seen some reports on it, so they got it from somewhere. So maybe, I don't know for sure.
There was local mainstream media affiliates there.
There were.
Yeah.
So then the next day, what the... The next day was like just a battle.
Yeah.
And
the night before, so, okay, so as we were driving in, we had been sent their plan, which had these different contingencies of red, yellow, and green. And green was if they got the court order that they were allowed to have their permitted march. Yellow was, I forget, I don't know, there was just this dumb, they're so stupid. But anyway, it was like, yellow was if, like, they can't have their permit, but the cops still seem on their side. Red was like, they don't have their permit and the cops are fighting them. So they had these different contingencies. So we knew it was like their green, you know, plan of just taking the park. And so... we were having some, like, major equipment problems, too, which is another challenge. You know, you literally have stuff taped up to the rig. We're trying to figure out the hotspots are turning off for some reason. You know, there was just all these things. The camera audio isn't working. So we're trying to get that all set up. You want to go in strong. But at some point, you know, we're hearing, like, all right, it's already starting. People are already... It's already happening, so we're like, we're really close, but we got to get over there, and then trying to figure out equipment in the car to make sure it's working, and so we dropped into, like, the war zone. Like, it was a shit show when we got there.
Yeah, so when we finally walked up, we were late, so it sounds like people had already been beating on each other for at least over an hour by the time we showed up. We showed up and they were standing at the corner stairs just throwing stuff back and forth. There was just people hucking stuff. And then,
like,
you know,
bottles
and whatever.
Smoke bombs
and all
rocks.
Kinds of shit. There was definitely people carrying weapons on both sides, firearms. At a certain point, like, the Nazis basically made, like, a shield wall. And people were throwing stuff at that. They were hitting each other back and forth, kicking each other. So much, just tons of melees going on. Beating each other with sticks, beating each other with poles for a while. I mean, it just went on for a really long time, it seemed like. And when the cops finally did move in, they just moved to clear everyone out of the park. And shot tear gas at the anti-fascist protesters. And then the Nazis actually pushed back on the riot cops. And you'll see footage in our videos there. Like, I shot part of that, and I was just videotaping Richard Spencer and the rest of those Nazis pushing back against, you know, a wall of riot cops with shields. And it was insane, because if any kind of
leftist, 10 years in prison.
Yeah. Anyone else on the left ever did that, or any anarchist tried to pull something like that with the cops? Yeah.
75 years in prison.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. I mean, it was amazing to see. Just like, you know, I was right up there, in the, you know, right by the park, and again, like, Chris and I buddied up. He was live streaming. I was trying to do photos and Twitter videos, but it was too... Usually that works fine. But it was too much. It was like, to try to use my technology in the middle of something like that. It was like, I could take pictures, and I just started taking video and photos and not worrying about trying to get it anywhere, which is hard because you want to be able to, like, report live in real time, but it was like, too much was happening, and then also there was just too much coming at me between cops, and nothing felt, it wasn't as personal as the night before, really, but it was like, I was just in the middle of all that, so I realized I had to, like, keep my wits about me. I mean, and we wear helmets and body armor in situations like that, so felt, you know, fairly safe that way, but I had never seen anything like that. I don't think I've ever seen a group like that just push against the police like that with no repercussions, except finally getting pepper sprayed, and the police just persisted to keep pushing them out of the park. But these motherfuckers were, like, hitting and pushing the cops, and the cops weren't doing shit.
And the few times,
except pepper spraying them.
And the few times the cops pepper sprayed them, it was like they just, like, lightly dusted them. Like,
right?
They,
yeah, no, totally.
It was like not like a full on like, I'm gonna fuck you up blast of mace. It was just like kind of sprinkle them a little bit.
I know. Yeah. That's why I just didn't
understand. They really handled them with kid gloves. They handled the Nazis with kid gloves when they chose to handle them, which was very seldom.
Yeah. But they did push them all. They did start making dispersal orders and push them all out of the park eventually.
Yeah. And so at that point, they pushed everyone out into the street, and it was just basically packs of the two different sides roaming through the streets, fighting, and just, like, everyone was kind of, there was just kind of fighting going on all over. And so, I mean, there was probably lots of stuff we weren't able to cover and missed because people spread out.
And at that point, some of it did get personal. Like, I definitely got shoved by some of those guys again, and apparently there, so this happened later, a woman came up and said, were you downtown? Were you in Charlottesville? I said, yes. And she said, I saw you on CNN. You were fighting with someone. So I was so embarrassed because I was like, damn, I'm supposed to be a reporter. I'm supposed to be, like, objective and just witnessing. But you know what? You put your fucking hands on me, I'm going to scream at you and call you a motherfucker, and I'm going to push you off, you know? Like, don't fucking touch me. I don't care what job I'm doing. You don't right. touch me. So I had to kind of breathe and let that in and just, like, okay, I have to stand by that. That happened. It got, I mean, I, you know, I was grateful I didn't have to see that, and I don't think, no one else has mentioned anything to me, so I don't think it, I think the news came in later about the car and that someone had died, and that, you know, this was way more important than a unicorn riot reporter screaming at a Nazi, but, like, it was, in the moment, I was embarrassed, because it was just like, wow, but then you gotta stand by it. Like, what, I'm supposed to be objective about that? like...
That's not journalism. You're fucking with me.
Don't fucking touch me.
You don't get to touch journalists.
No, you don't get to fucking touch me. I wasn't even in their face. I was just like, what? They were just like side-checking me because I was walking with a camera or something, you know, so...
Telling the Nazis to stop touching us was a constant theme.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And then at one point, so it was like, it definitely got, like, pretty intense when everyone was just, like, they were just roaming the streets because more, like, fights were breaking out. And, you know, I was there at the parking garage, and at one point, like, they were just kicking and hitting with sticks. This young black man who, you know, has now, like, been on the news, and his mom is, like, talking on Twitter and stuff. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But that was really intense, and I just, like...
Oh, you, like, walked up on the...
I was, like, right there when all that was happening.
I also filmed it. I watched it, and it was horrible. It was horrible to watch. They took, like, some sort of board and just cracked it right over his head.
How many people on one dude?
Oh, God. It was, like, 10 or 12.
Yeah.
Fascists on one guy who...
really fast.
Yeah, and, I mean, there, it kind of was like a melee that was already happening in the street that spilled into the parking lot, and somehow this guy kind of got pushed away from... everybody else that was, like, fighting the Nazis kind of off on his own, and that's when they kind of, like, swarmed him like jackals.
Yeah. And it all happened really fast. It's not like I would never, like, stand around and watch that and film it. It's just, like, you roll up and then other people are stepping in. You know, it's like, you're always gauging it, like... I know I'm supposed to be documenting, but I'm never going to just, like, stand around and observe, you know. But at the same time, it's like, am I the most, you know, who's helping? And it all happened, like, super fast. And then his friends were helping him.
Well, and so the intel the Nazis were saying was that there was going to be 2,000 Antifa or 3,000 Antifa, somewhere in that range. And it was way, way less than that that actually showed up. And I would say for a lot of the day, Antifa actually seemed outnumbered. But for the battles I actually witnessed, they definitely held their own. Like, people fought outnumbered with the Nazis. And the other thing I noticed about the Nazis is they don't really want to fight with, like, even numbers. They want to, you know, they want to beat up, you know, one black guy in a parking lot when there's 15 of them and one of them's pointing a gun at people. If you go to our Twitter feed, you can see a picture of that parking garage conversation where you see clearly a Nazi pointing a pistol. And so those are the circumstances that fascists are comfortable fighting in, but I just noticed that actually even outnumbered, a lot of the Antifa were really good fighters, and from people, I guess people you wouldn't maybe expect to be able to hold their own.
And at that point, too, like, his friends had him, and there were medics, and they were pulled off the side, and I could tell this person was okay, and they didn't want pictures, so, you know, we backed off, and I just burst into tears, and I was standing there, and then someone came up and was taking, I could tell they were taking my picture, and I had this moment of, like, fuck, I better, like, stop my emotions and reel it in because I'm supposed to be professional and there's going to be a picture of, like, with the Unicorn Riot logo and I'm crying like a little baby. And then I was like, fuck this. I'm crying because this is horrific and I don't give a shit and I'm not afraid. And if someone takes a picture of me, so what? So what? You know, I'm feeling something. Who wouldn't? You know, this is horrible. So yeah, that was kind of like a poignant moment for me of, like, I don't have to apologize for being upset. I don't have to pretend I'm objective. It's like, this is horrendous.
Fuck no, you're a human being first.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Well, that's good to hear that. Because I always just think, when I think about, like, the right wing, I just have this, like, stereotype in my head that they're just doing push-ups all day. And when you look at the footage, like, it looked like, you know, it wasn't like the white trailer trash everybody was saying it was going to be. It was like, you know... It was the guy who sells you your stereo at Best Buy.
Yeah.
It's the clean cut polo wearing.
Yeah. Yeah, and they showed up better armed too. They seem to have you know, more kind of like sticks and shields. And even with that, they still seem to have a hard time dealing with the people that were coming at them. So even with what I would say is better weaponry and more numbers, they still seem to be either at times evenly matched or outmatched for what was happening. And honestly, from what they had done on Friday night, I wonder if that how many more people that drew out from the local community just from them basically beating up kids on a college campus. I think that really pissed people off.
Did you have any contact with any promoter, any of the organizers in the area? Like, were there plans? Like, did things go the way they were? Like, you know, like what kind of organizing went into?
We didn't really. We made like one contact at one point, but everyone was so busy and. It's kind of odd.
So
it's like
fluid.
Sometimes, I mean, I love it if someone can tell us, like, where some things are happening at times, like, to get that tip. But it has kind of changed that way, like, you know, with doing the recording now, it's like, I don't always want to know what's going into things, and I think it can just create kind of an odd dynamic.
Right.
But it's nice when people can tell you what's up. But I think it was just so clear, like, what was going to be happening and where it was going to be happening that we didn't really need that much more information.
Right.
But people knew we were there.
So, I mean, you keep calling, you keep saying it's a Nazi march, mm-hmm. They were Nazis, and, you know, you hear a lot of people say, oh, you know, the alt-right, they're not Nazis, the Proud Boy, and everybody's like, now everybody is, all these people who were, like, headlining the Nazi march, they're all saying, I'm not a Nazi. You know, so how do you come to the conclusion that they were all Nazis other than the fact that they're, like, burning crosses and...
Well, yeah,
burning tiki torches.
So,
just to clarify,
so the first thing...
You hear it, like,
yeah.
I guess what I mean is, what do you have to say to people who say those were not Nazis?
I think that's important, because sometimes it is a blanket term that's used. It's kind of funny to me when I see people saying, like, oh, you know, to someone else, like, on social media, they're like, oh, you just call someone a Nazi. It's like, no, they actually self-identify. They say, I am a Nazi, which we had that, too. Some people were like, yeah, I'm a Nazi. Sometimes they have, like, swastika tattoos, and they're Sig Heiling. It's like, these are Nazis. I also think there are people that definitely don't identify that are... white supremacists, white nationalists. I mean, there are, you know, they don't identify with Nazi Germany and all of that. But I think when you, like, if you're affiliating with straight up fucking self-declared Nazis, you pretty much just throw yourself in with that. But I think it can be misapplied sometimes. Like, sometimes they are just white. I would say absolutely hands down they are all white supremacists.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. Every single one of those groups is a white supremacist, and they are down for violence against anyone who opposes them and anyone who is not white and with them. So that is, they are just absolutely ready to try to destroy and attack anyone who is not with them and not white. So that I would say could be a pretty blanket statement. But yeah, just, I mean, straight up Nazi KKK. And then everything else is just kind of this mutated thing of trying to be something else, but that's really what it comes down to. I mean, white supremacy is so vile that, you know, it's just the core of all these things.
We also put out a, it's in one of our articles. We didn't originally make it, but someone basically looked at the Facebook API and was able to determine from that what people's political leanings were of the people that were attending the march, and overwhelmingly the largest contingent, which was definitely over a quarter of their entire contingent, was League of the South, and they usually wear just like white shirts, at least that's what we saw. They wore white shirts. They kind of tried to act sort of like, they'd kind of dress up a little and kind of try to act like gentlemanly, like, for like maybe 2 seconds.
And League of the South is a white supremacist.
Yeah, they're kind of like a Klan. I think they're considered Confederate nationalists. Mm-hmm. And then there's groups like the National Socialist Movement, Traditionalist Workers Party.
What's the
Vanguard?
Traditional Worker Party.
Traditional.
It's weird that it's not
Traditional Worker Party.
Yeah.
And that's Matthew Heinbach.
Who?
What's that about? What's the Traditional Workers Party?
They were the ones actually who organized the Pikeville thing. Matthew Heinbach. That Wendy was able to go cover.
They're like white separatists.
No, right? They're Nazis. And the same thing for, is it American Vanguard or Vanguard America?
I think Vanguard America, that's who the...
Vanguard America.
Murderer.
Who the murderer actually is a member of, although they're trying to deny that right now. But those are actually Nazi groups with the same ideology as... as actual Nazis. Like, they like Hitler. They, you know, only recently did Traditional Workers' Party stop using swastikas in their stuff. And then there was another about a quarter contingent that identifies as just vaguely as the alt-right. And then the fourth one was...
It's like so basically... It's like 17%.
Oh, right, yeah. And so, you know, I think it's interesting that...
Again, alt-nights are like anti-Antifa, so it's like, if you're anti-Antifa, what does that make you?
Right. And so actually now, Gavin McInnes, who founded the Proud Boys... is trying to distance himself from the rally and saying that Proud Boys had nothing to do with this and the Nazis are really dumb. And now, you know, he was saying things like, you know, we've conceded the moral high ground now because of what you've done, but is refusing to acknowledge that Jason Kessler is a Proud Boy. And so, yeah, I don't know. There seems to be kind of two approaches within the alt-right, and you have the old-school Nazis that are like, we're Nazis, and we're proud to be Nazis, and we're going to say it, and the alt-right, which is like, we need to be more vague and subtle, and basically a kind of crypto-fascism, where people will accept these fascist ideas without realizing what they're signing up for. And I think the Nazis have actually kind of ruined what I felt was their most dangerous tactic of kind of convincing people to believe in these ideas which are fascist and racist and white supremacist and patriarchal and colonial. And they've kind of wrecked that for the alt.
They've blown the top off that, destroyed.
Yeah, and there was always a lot of arguments within their movement about which kind of approach to take. And so the people overwhelmingly that were at this march were the let's just be proud racist fascists. I don't think in retrospect that worked out real well for them.
No. So then after the parking lot.
So then we kind of somehow we were following this. We were sort of like regrouping. At that point, they were all being like leaving the town, you know, and definitely having fights along the way. But eventually, it just became more and more where there was just like anti-fascists and civil rights, and you know, these some marches, marching bands of people, kind of just like with a different message, kind of somewhat celebratory in terms of like marching band music and empowering. And people were gathering towards this one park. I did see some interviews with clergy where they were just like straight up calling out white supremacy as sin and evil. They're just like, it's, you know, not that I prescribed all of that, but it was interesting to just see, you know, that language used. So we started heading to this one park, and then at that point there wasn't any like fighting going on anymore, and I just really wanted to upload what I had and get Twitter videos out and get photos out and just try to get some information out. So I just sat for a while by myself and was just doing that with, you know, not being bothered at all. And then, you know, through text communications, it was like, all right, round up, where is everyone? Roll call, people kind of like saying, okay, I'm here, I'm there. And so we did end up meeting up at like a medic station. The three of us, me, Pat, and Chris, met up there, and we were trying to get filming things, trying to find some other folks. You know, people were like, oh, here, I'm filming here. But it felt like it had wound down. It had that feeling of like, okay, this is over, and ish, you know, yeah. And what do we do now? And so at that point, you know, there's still things to do, but, you know, you're so... I've been tear gassed, I've been pepper sprayed, I'm wearing body armor, it's hot, I'm dehydrated, it's like, all right, is there anything more that we need to capture, because there's going to be a lot of other people taking film and video, or do we need to get back to the hotel and try to start, like, cranking this stuff out in a certain way? And so we decided, the three of us, to go back to our car. So we started walking back to the parking garage. It wasn't very far. And we were walking down one street, and we could hear what sounded like a march, and see some people. So I remember thinking, like, oh, there's still something going on. Maybe we should check it out. Like, still something we could film to get some, like, because I was like, oh, I don't have a lot of, like, positive images. It's just this intense fighting. And then we just saw people running fast, like, away from something. So we... just, like, all looked at each other and just started, like, booking it towards the air, wherever people were running from. And then we just got up, and it was, for me, it was very hard to figure out what was going on. I saw, like, two cars that were smashed. I saw people on the ground. Medics were yelling to keep people away and, like, forming kind of, like, human chains around the injured people. I didn't, you know, at that point, again, it's like I'm not any sort of, like, reporting on something is never as important to me as what's happening. And so I almost didn't even want to ask because I didn't want to, like, disturb people. You know, it's like I'm being very cautious, so I just waited it out. I just had to try to take some photos that didn't ID anyone's faces and try to figure out what was going on, and then slowly just started getting bits of information and, like, firsthand accounts of people who saw the car crash into the crowd.
Yeah, so, I mean, when I went, I met them back at the park because I basically got covered in tear gas and mace. And noticed that whenever I was directly in the sun, it would just be like my skin was on fire, and I finally couldn't ignore it anymore. So I had the medics, like, give me a Maalox bath, basically, and just, like, nice. Wipe me off with some Maalox at a permitted rally that I was at a park, like, two or three blocks away from the park where everyone was fighting, that, like, the counter-protesters had gotten a permit for. And yeah, we walked up, we saw those people running. We were basically on the scene about 2 minutes after it happened. And I just remember walking up and seeing that van out in the intersection, no one was in it. And then I looked in the car and there was still a woman, a person of color who was in there, just looked totally dazed, like didn't know what was going on. There was drops of blood all over her windshield and all over the outside of her car, which was, I don't think it was hers. I think it was someone else. There's blood all over the ground, like medics and random people just trying to deal with the situation. It was just complete pandemonium in the street, and people kept being like, where's the ambulance? And it felt like it took a really, really long time for the ambulance to show up. But the first thing that rolled up was an armored vehicle with a cop pointing tear gas canisters at everyone.
And people were just tear gas like yelling at the cops, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, we need an ambulance.
Where's the ambulance? So finally,
a fire truck shows up,
but they usually have paramedic units in those.
That's true. Okay.
And started actually doing CPR on people, you know?
Sorry.
So I don't know, that was like what I saw essentially, but Reb Z was standing right there, and you know, had he been standing in the wrong spot, like, he would have got hit too.
Yeah, so. they were trying to use a drone, and so they were up on a roof of somewhere trying, and the drone wouldn't work. There was something going on and they just couldn't get it to go, so they were like, okay, let's just
the drone
not
kept
use
saying
the drone.
There was magnetic interference, which they had never encountered before.
So they put the drone away and decided to go down and film. And so they were right there, and yeah, I mean, we heard, like, definitely, like, firsthand accounts. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of that out there, but what I've heard, what I heard consistently was a couple people said they saw the car and wondered why it was just sitting there, because there was, like, space for it to move, but it didn't. And then suddenly they just saw it, like, full speed just go from a stop to, like, 40 miles an hour, 30 to 40 miles an hour. And someone else said they thought, like, it, from where that car, the car was, it looked like a bigger crowd it was going to plow into. But because there were cars on that street as well as the crowd, they ended up hitting people and the cars. But if the cars hadn't been there, they would have hit a lot. He would have hit a lot more people.
Yeah. You know, it's in the woman who was killed. Her name is Heather Heyer.
Yeah.
And she was, it's still unclear whether she was a member of the IWW or not, but she was definitely, you know, in the struggle. And
I read one account that the man who's in the photo that's been shown everywhere flying off the back of the car, he pushed his fiance out of the way and got hit by the car, and they were both friends with Heather.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. I mean, I mean, 20 people were really injured. Yeah. Also, I mean,
there was 5 in critical condition on top of one being dead, and we haven't really heard much in the media about those people. Also, a weird this weird thing happened. So, you know, when we get out of the car, everyone's like, well, where are they at? And one tactic we always use is look for the helicopter. Wherever the helicopter is, you know that's probably where the protest is, right? So we saw the helicopter flying earlier that day. So there's a helicopter flying around. Then all of a sudden, it's not around. Then, you know, eventually I get on Twitter. A few hours later, I find out there's been a helicopter crash. And it was kind of, it looked like it was outside a golf course pretty close to town. And then we come to find out that two police officers died in this helicopter crash. And mainstream media kept saying three killed in this incident.
That's so weird.
And it was weird. It was just kind of weird that they reported that way, because they said they included them because they claim that the cops were responding to the incident and then something happened and the helicopter crashed. But I mean, it wasn't a windy day. It wasn't, nothing seemed really crazy with the weather or anything else. And then all of a sudden these two cops end up dead in a helicopter crash. And then the mainstream media ran with it as if they were involved. And I just wonder if that's really appropriate to say that it was the same incident. Because it was, to me, it seemed like two different incidents. Like, nobody on the ground noticed that the helicopter flew off somewhere and crashed. And it crashed, like, still outside of town. So they must have known they were going to crash and flew it over by this golf course where the video emerged. But
I mean,
it was really weird.
Yeah, I interpreted it as, it's just them holding police lives above anyone else. Because if anyone else got in a car accident on the way there, that wouldn't be included in this count. And it was causing a lot of confusion. People did think three people died from the crash, or the, I don't know what to call it, the attack with the car. It is very bizarre that continued on
for like
the way
days,
it was framed.
Basically, they ran with three dead, and it just wasn't the same incident. So there's still no details about why the helicopter crashed.
As you're writing about this, are you describing it as an attack? I mean, do you find it useful to use the language of terrorism as you're describing it? Do you describe it as terrorism?
In this situation, it's kind of like Nazi. It's like terrorism. People want, you know, this is terror. And then it's like, and I get it, and it is. But, like, absolutely, if this had happened in any other country and you were seeing it on the news, it would just absolutely, like, a car plowed into a group of people, a car driven, you know. And then at first, of course, there was, like, lots of different rumors about who that person was, but it's pretty clear now. I think his teacher's been on the news saying he was a fan of Hitler. You know, it's pretty straightforward at this point. Absolutely. I mean, I don't usually like to bother with that word, but in this case, definitely, I would call it that.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's terrorism. I guess my other comment about this, though, is this terrorism isn't really all that new, especially for people who use a website called the Daily Stormer, which is a website I'm sure everyone's familiar with at this point, but at one point was much more obscure in the public eye.
You shouldn't assume that everybody, not everybody who listens to these kinds of things knows everything.
So basically, it's just like a website and like a troll platform for hardened Nazis and Ku Klux Klan members to use. And it's been around for a long time, like at least over a decade. I think longer, actually. It may have been around like 15 or 20 years. And I think SPLC reported at one point, that the Southern Poverty Law Center, that over 200 people had been murdered by users of Stormfront. Dylan Roof was a Stormfront user. There's been a lot of complete psychotic sociopaths who have gone from this website after using it and gone and murdered people. So we found out that GoDaddy had pulled hosting for Daily Stormer finally, saying that it violated their terms of service. But this really isn't new for this group of people. These people do this all the time. It's not like this was the first time they've ever done this. You know, they went and shot counter-protesters in Portland. You know, Dylan Roof murdered people. We had the guy who stabbed people in the throat in Portland. And for some reason, people seem to kind of excuse that for a while publicly, and still continue to seem to kind of denounce Antifa and say that, you know, you're just crushing these people's free speech and, you know, they're not really doing anything. But this whole situation about the rise of fascism in the U.S. was never actually about free speech. And I think now people have had to learn this lesson the hard way that this isn't about free speech. This is about self-defense. We know historically what happens when fascist movements rise. We know what they do if you just let fascists wander around unopposed. We know what happens. I mean, it's real simple. Like, read any history book to do that, and you don't need a statue to read a history book. So, to me, it just seems pretty straightforward that this was never about that. And, you know, if we want to look at, you know, people are saying that the two sides are morally equivalent, which is complete and utter bullshit. So, like, the alt-right, I keep hearing them say this over and over again, Antifa almost killed a guy. Oh my God, they almost killed a guy with a bike lock. You know? And it's like, okay, so Antifa, so far Antifa's almost killed the guy with a bike lock, and then we have this whole other trail of murders coming from the Nazi side. So, I mean, if we're just looking at who's killing who, Antifa's not doing that.
Right. Right. I mean, the other thing is, like, anti-fascists or leftists in general would never indiscriminately hurt civilians. Like, yeah, that's just not how people in the United States, that's not what folks who are on the left, quote-unquote left, do. They're not indiscriminately out hurting people. Like, sorry, if a fascist gets hit in the head with a bike lock, it's not the same thing as a Nazi driving into a crowd of people.
Yeah. Both sides use violence, but both sides don't use violence the same way.
Right. So, is there any, because I have a couple other questions about Unicorn Riot and, like, and other stuff. I'm just wondering, is there anything else about that weekend in Charlottesville that, you know, is, like, on your mind, or that, like, any other thoughts on what you saw or experienced, or what, you know, what you think it means, or how you're processing it, or anything we've left out that you like?
I think, you know, for me, we saw the like, right after the attack with the car had happened, I talked to some people who saw things happen. There was, you know, people saying, we think someone has died, and it felt very real as a possibility at that time. You know, hearing there were 15 bodies laying on the ground, like, things I take very seriously. And, you know, you after time you discern when people, there's a rumor, and you can kind of have a sense of it. So I could feel very deeply, like, this is real, this happened, we don't know what, you know, we're trying to determine. And then we had to go back to the hotel, which was very close by, you know, so we left there and went back to the hotel, and then we were heading back. And I got a call from one of the people we were rolling with who had been right there filming. And he said, the person has died. And I just thought I was going to throw up. Like, it was so gut-wrenching. And I was like, I just started, like, bursting, you know, just like, what the fuck? And, like, I thought I was going to vomit for real in the car. And then he was like, I just witnessed a murder. And then it was like, we have to secure footage, you know? And so it's like, and then you just go into action of, like, all right, what can we do, you know? But I won't forget that. I'm still, you know, and we have the normal, you know, with the stuff, like, they're such fucking clowns. Like, they're such clowns. They're such jackasses. And we have all this leaked information of their stupid conversations, and they sound like idiots. But someone is now dead. So it's like, you know, you're used to the kind of, like, making fun and laughing and blowing off steam from this intense environment. But this was just so different. Like, we still allowed ourselves that, like, you know, trying to feel better and, like, making fun of fucking jackass white supremacists. But at the same time, everyone just kind of kept going back to that, like, wow, we don't want to, I don't ever want to be desensitized like that. Like, I know I need to be able to function, and I want to find, like, a healthy detachment at times and not get completely overwhelmed with the pain of it. But at the same time, like, I don't want to be desensitized, because to me that, like, that feeling is like my power, is my strength. I'm always stronger when I can really feel. But then, you know, you still got a job to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was gross. It was a terrible feeling to know that, you know, we were at this event and the Nazis ended up killing someone. And really injuring and traumatizing a whole lot of other people that are never going to forget what happened.
Yeah,
I mean, Trump today said that, you know, once again made the completely baseless moral equivalency argument, and that, you know, Antifa was also violent and they started it, but actually... they didn't start it. If you know, both days, Friday night they beat up kids. Saturday we posted a video of when the Nazis marched down the street and charged a bunch of people who didn't want them to go to the park. So that's like not true at all. Not that facts matter anymore. But you know, so that's what Trump is saying. It took him two whole days to actually say he wasn't down with the white supremacists. But now, you know, today's back to, you know, both sides are the same, so.
I would say the only other piece, too, is that we have, like, quite a lot of information from these chats that they were in on Discord, and so we're going to be releasing that.
So what happened there? You got someone contacted Unicorn Riot, yep.
Gave us a lot of information from, yeah, someone infiltrated their chats.
Not someone from your group.
An anonymous source infiltrated their chats, and these were vetted chats. So there's a lot of information there. I mean, we already have a short video up of some of the imagery, and it's just really vile. And we always do content advisories. I'm into those. I just think people should consent to what they're about to see. So just a pretty straightforward. This is what you're about to see, is what works for us, and I'm really grateful for that personally, because I like sometimes it's timing for me. I need to like breathe, I need to eat, I need to rest, and then I can look at this garbage. So, and it's just very blatant. Like any kind of like semblance of trying to say they're just whatever they say they are is just blown away by these conversations and the memes that they created after the car attack, after she died. These memes are horrendous. Just making fun of the whole thing.
Right.
And so, So that's going to be continuing. There's going to be more and more information coming from that. So.
And all these people, like Baked Alaska, Nathan Domingo, I thought I saw his name on there. Like, mm-hmm. All these people are sitting there in these feeds watching this, participating in this, like, absolutely disgusting 4chan.
Yep.
Shit.
And, you know, I believe in free speech. I don't think that anyone should be jailed for a photograph they turn into a meme that's racist. I don't think anyone should go to jail or be persecuted by the government. But I do think it absolutely informs intent and complicity and inciting people to violence, and that there's a responsibility there, and people are reacting to that.
And I would like it if some liberals would take responsibility for this situation instead of enabling it to the point that we've already gotten to. So even though groups like the ACLU and Southern Poverty Law Center do good work, they've also pushed the narrative that, you know, this is about free speech and we can't have them infringing on free speech. But this isn't actually about free speech. We know that, you know, if these people are given an inch, they'll take a mile. You know, the second they're drunk on power, they'll beat up college kids. This whole idea that, you know, we're going to hold signs and chant until these Nazis go away is...
Singing this land is our land.
Yeah, especially singing this land is our land. Like, that's not going to work, and the Nazis don't care about that, and they don't care about people's free speech, and they don't care about any of these things, and that the second they are given a chance to lord over you and bully you around and or kill you, they will do it. And I just hope that, I think it's unfortunate that we've had to wait for so many people to die. I don't know why this time, finally, everyone is outraged. I'm glad, but it took way too long, and I hope that moving forward, a lot of people who identify as liberals are going to realize what needs to be done, and that is going to involve actually fighting these people. So,
and one of the other things, too, is the ACLU Virginia tweeted that protesters were throwing rocks at this car, which... If that had been true, who cares? But, like, from every account I heard, it was like the car was just lurking off to the side. Like, no one was even aware that this could even potentially... So the ACLU went, like, way out there. They have, like, no... That's not their position. That's not their job. They're not reporters. And so they did retract it and delete the tweet and made an apology for that. But it was very telling that they would, like, right. spread misinformation that would seem to justify this attack was pretty telling, even though they did retract it and apologize.
And one of the board members resigned.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, there's just like, I mean, the ripples from this are,
yeah.
like we still have, I mean, we don't yeah. know.
The fallout is tremendous right now. All those CEOs quitting out of Trump's cabinet, the Republicans turning and denouncing Trump for taking too long to even denounce that this was basically a white supremacist terrorist attack.
You did see the Tiki Torch company's statement,
Tiki.
Right? They were like, I can't remember. I'm sorry. We'll have to find it, but it was pretty funny. They were like, we do not condone. These are
supposed to be used. The makers of Tiki Torch were not.
Backyard barbecues and. Yeah.
Well, it was like, people were saying, like, you know, Polynesian tiki torches built in China with everybody wearing polo shirts made in Taiwan on stolen land, talking about blood and soil. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
They're clowns. I mean, they're clowns, and they're playing at this, like, whole thing, but with horrific results.
I mean, anyone who uses the moral equivalency argument is essentially, one, spreading information that's not true, and two, is actually legitimizing Nazi ideas. And so I hope people realize that that is actually what's going on.
So, I mean, I feel like another reason why y'all know so much about the alt-right and these neo-Nazis and why you're able, you know they're Nazis because you've been reading this shit for fucking years. And, like, before the alt-right was even the alt-right, when it was just racist assholes on 4chan making memes, they took a special interest in Unicorn Riot's coverage of the 7th precinct shutdown. What was that, in 2015? Was that when that was?
Fourth precinct. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk about, like, you know, that experience with the neo-Nazis from 4chan and kind of what went down?
So, the police in Minnesota executed a black man in handcuffs named Jamar Clark, and the community there got angry and decided to start protesting. They went and occupied the 4th precinct. We have reporters...
And it was like a month-long
It was like a month-long occupation of the police station, and people just, like, slept in the doorway of the police station and just kept demanding that they release the video, which the cops didn't want to release. And, you know, we have reporters there. And at the time, we, you know, the way Unicorn Riot works is someone might be live, and then we could have other people online, you know, maybe helping out with live tweets or banning trolls or whatever it is that we would do. But we had never actually had a wave of trolls like this come at us in a way that we had never before experienced. And so while our reporters are trying to live stream, you know, I'm sitting in Denver watching all this unfold. And this was before we had a little more money than we have now. So live stream pays you for different tiers of services. So at
you
the
pay
time,
live
we
pay live
oh yeah, sorry. We pay live stream. And they had, yeah, you're right. I said it wrong.
It should be the other way, right?
They should be paying us, but they're not. We pay them. And so at the time, we weren't paying them enough to have the function to turn off the chat. So we'd literally have to have individuals log in and actually individually ban, and delete each comment. And all of a sudden, we'd just be like, our chat, like, we would know they would come because all of a sudden it would just start spiking, like, hundreds, sometimes even thousands of more viewers. And then the chat just became, like, instantly, like, peeking into the seventh layer of hell. Like, Nazis, the most racist, crazy stuff. And we were just like, what? Where are these people coming from? And they would get mad whenever we were live streaming and just basically come out of 4chan and Daily Stormer. And just swarm on our live stream. So we just have people sitting there banning them or whatever. And so one night, one of them, or actually a few of them, came at us and came and basically live streamed themselves driving to the protest wearing camouflage with their faces covered. And we're like, we're going on a search and rescue mission for Unicorn. And then they cocked a gun. And then walked around and looked for our reporters, Nico and Lorenzo, and finally found Nico and said some shit.
That video's creepy.
Yeah, and they were just being super creepy and gross. A few nights later, the same group of people came back and shot 5 people. All black people. After they basically said a bunch of racist stuff, got people mad when the people tried to confront them about it, they basically acted all shook and pulled out their guns and tried to shoot them and then tried to argue that it was self-defense.
And they did shoot them, but everyone was okay in that. Yeah. I mean, people had pretty serious injuries, but...
One person could have died, but everyone thankfully lived during this. But they don't like us. You know, periodically we get threats from people like that. Which we're used to. And yeah. And so.
But this is the group that eventually became the alt-right, right?
I mean, essentially, yeah. Before, yeah, kind of slightly before that. I mean, the alt-right, I think, has been around.
Strain,
but,
the strain,
yeah.
The thread that.
The alt-right, I think, has been around since like 2005, but not the way that it was after Trump got elected, though. Yeah, and so, you know, we ended up doing a whole. Actually, Nico wrote up a whole. And it's like 10-part series about the trial and the documents, and Scarsella ended up only getting 15 years in prison for that. You know, and that's like, oh, okay, well, you know, he didn't kill anyone, maybe, or whatever, but keep in mind that J20 defendants are facing, what, 60 years, 75 years? Yeah. They're facing 75 years for rioting, supposedly. But someone can actually go to a protest with intention to piss people off.
To commit a hate crime.
To commit a hate crime and only get 15 years. So.
Yeah, a journalist, one of the journalists from the New Inquiry, his name escapes me, he had a tweet the other day that was, if 220 of us can get felony riot charges for being, you know, on... present on this thing at J20 and looking at 75 years, what about the thousands of white supremacists? Can they all be charged with murder? You know, not that, like, that's what I'm not looking for that, but it's like,
absolutely.
It's still like, it's shocking that.
Yeah, and that's a good point too. Like, we're not looking, you know, like, we have, you know, prison abolitionists, police abolitionists, in our organization, definitely anti, you know, police involvement, personally. You know, just personal principles around that. And so it was a little tough because it's like, this is the court system. This is, you know, just kind of an odd situation where Unicorn Knight has this footage that obviously it's already out on the internet. It can be used. And so it just, it was a little bit of a zone for me of just trying to feel into that. But when I think about, like, the families of the man who was murdered, the people who were shot and the families who were shot. In the current system we have now, to have no justice for that would have been horrendous. So it's like, that's the situation we're in. We don't have something else in place. You know, if the only thing the courts and the cops did was arrest white supremacists for shooting and trying to kill people and killing people, I wouldn't, you know, despise them so much.
Right.
But...
we'll see.
You know. So it was just kind of a tricky thing. It's like, you don't really, I don't really rejoice in someone going to prison, really, but if the alternative is no justice for these families and these people who got shot, you know, then I have to be like, all right, that's something, you know?
Right.
I mean, I think the other thing that's important to pay attention to is that anything the state ends up deciding to do to the Nazis. And I think after this whole thing in Charlottesville, like, you know, I wonder things like, is Richard Spencer going to get grand juried? Is Jason, you know, is Jason Kessler, any of the other organizers going to get grand juried? What are they going to do to them? And I mean, basically anything that the state decides to do to the right, they will also do to the left. And I think that's kind of the catch-22 of this, is like, we can celebrate what the state may or may not decide to do going forward, but you know, if they actually do start doing things that are, you know, quasi-legal to these Nazis, they'll definitely do them to, like, radical leftists.
I mean, the one thing that came out today, too, is that there's a $3 million lawsuit against all of the organizations that were part of Unite the Right and all of the individuals that were the organizers. And it's brought on by two of the people that were in one of the vehicles that was hit. So that's happening.
Right.
That should be interesting to see.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And I mean, you know, the only thing I tack on to what you were saying is that I would say they've already been doing all that shit to us. People on our side are getting grand juried left and right. Like, people are looking at lifetimes in prison for just being on the street. Mm-hmm. Like, so. Shit, well, you know, I'm glad you made it back, and I'm glad that, you know, things. You know, fuck. I mean, I'm not glad, actually. Everything sucks right now. It's a horrifying moment we're in.
Yeah.
And, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty weird times that we're in, and people need to realize, like, this is a crisis that needs to be dealt with now. And the longer we let this fester, I think the worse the problem's going to be. And we shouldn't look for state solutions to fascism, because state solutions, in my experience, from everything I've documented, are the state always enables these fascists and allows them to do this, and many times works hand in hand with them. So, like, I'm kind of, in one way, I'm surprised the cops didn't do what they do in other cities and just keep everyone separate, but in another way, I'm sort of not surprised.
Well, that's because you're a cop. Just kidding. Oh, shit. Well.
Where do you go from there?
Okay, you talk about, you know, your reporter. I'm just making fun of what some idiot has said online. Anyway, you're reporters, you do this all volunteer, you know, you've started this organization from scratch with a couple friends you'd met at protests and like different actions, and, you know, you've built Unicorn Riot up over the last 2 or 3 years from like this, like, you know, ragtag group of journalists to a ragtag group of journalists.
Exactly.
And it's like, you know, just such a testament to hard work and consistency, and it's been amazing to watch your project grow and have it turn into such an amazing platform that people really trust, you know?
And yeah, to we started off, like, everything was absolutely 100% volunteer, and people were putting their own money in, and then we were able to get, you know, donations as time goes on, and, you know, cover certain expenses. The whole organization, all the administrative, is still completely volunteer, but we are able to pay people for contract for media at times. It's like less than minimum wage.
Yeah, our members well,
yeah,
at all.
It's just to try to figure out some way that that was born out of, like, donations being able to come in, and to try to find some sustainable way when things like Standing Rock happen for travel. I mean, it was really great, I must say. We're, like, laying low in this hotel room. We've just found out this woman has been murdered, and that there, like, our people, like, witnessed it. And there's, like, white supremacists rolling. We're on the ground floor with, like, the outside doorways. And we were just like, fuck this. This is so sketchy. Poor John needs to go out to smoke. And they're talking to him about his live stream. Like, it was the worst.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
we, like... We reach out to the collective and just like, can we get a finance approval to move to a hotel room where we're not going to be, like, laying on the floor wondering if we're going to get shot at, and we're not even being paranoid? Like, it could happen. And everyone was like, yes, 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 please, you know? And, like, thank God, people. So it's like, you know.
So I hope you got, like, a room with a sauna and had, like, $400.
No, it wasn't that. It was, you know.
We got a room with a couch and a TV, and we thought it was amazing.
Don't share any operational details.
We got a room with, like, cameras in the hallways.
Nice.
A little bit fancier. But mostly it was just, and what we did is we picked
a place. No Band-Aids on the comforter.
No, and it was like 12 miles away from the city center, so we were, but I still overheard, I was like creeping at the door overhearing conversations, and one of the things I overheard, people who had attended the rally that were clearly part of it, one of them was saying like, about Trump's announcement, and was like, well, he didn't denounce us, that was good, I wish he'd said something about free speech, we have to control the narrative. You know, it's just ridiculous. So that was pretty gross, and I was, like, hiding there. But we did feel way more secure.
And so at one point, Reb Z came over and told us what these guys were saying. They knew he was a live streamer because I saw him live streaming. And
I was really worried for him.
Yeah.
Watching his live stream, watching him argue, because I was watching his live stream, and I was watching him argue with these argue with them. And I was like, damn, man, like, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, yeah, and so he
sorry
comes
to cut you off.
No, it's all right. He comes over and is like, man, I just talked to these guys. They knew who I was. They saw my live stream, and they're like, hey man, did you hear the guy who did the car thing was a communist? Did you know he was a communist? And he was like, what? And then they were like, yeah, dude, here, just come into our hotel room. I'll show you on our phone. Come to our hotel and we'll show you that the guy who rammed people with his car was a communist. And he was like, I'm good. That's cool. And so eventually we were like, that's it. We're getting out of here. Like, we were like, we're leaving now. And right around that time is when we heard that other people were evacuating some, like, safe houses and stuff, and that there could be potential, like, drive-bys and other stuff that was going on. So we were just like, we're fucking out of here.
Yeah.
Like, we're totally done. You know, and that's the other thing, is that everyone is a communist. To them that doesn't want to live under fascism. Anyone who thinks fascism is bad
I would
is
just
a communist
they
now.
They don't know what we really believe, personally. I'd like their ignorance. The only other question I have is, like, you know, how would you... You also were down there for Standing Rock at that big battle on that bridge. You know, I guess, do you have any thoughts on, like, you know, comparing those two experiences or, any, you know, just... Or anything you want to say about being at Standing Rock and just, like, it feels like it's a war, you know? It's a fucking war. This is the United States turning into a fucking war zone, like, zone by zone.
I guess so to my knowledge, no one died at Standing Rock. I think one or two people died in transit from, like, car accidents and, like, hitting deer and stuff. But no one actually died in Standing Rock, which kind of blows my mind when I compare that situation, that night on the bridge, Backwater Bridge, around Thanksgiving weekend. They're hosing everyone down, tons of injuries, medics just hauling people out all night.
It was like negative 14 degrees or something.
Somehow no one died during that, but Charlottesville is where a bunch of people, a person died, at least right now. And I guess to me it was just weird. It was just weird like that because I was just waiting for something bad to happen at Standing Rock like that, and it didn't. And this time I expected it to be kind of, more or less I thought it was going to be kind of like a nothing burger. Like nothing was really going to go on. And that ended up not being the case, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how to compare it. I mean, except for what you said of the war zone, like... Standing Rock for me was the first time I'd been somewhere with, like, concussion grenades. It was the first time I got tear gassed. I have to watch. This is after this weekend. I'm just studying more for myself. Like, are there any elements of this that are kind of like a daredevilism for me, because I don't really want to engage in that. And clearly that's not the only thing driving me, because I could find way more fun things to do. But I'm just studying that a little bit, because this was real close and I fell a little in over my head at different points. And so
it's like war journalism.
Yeah. Like, do I really, I want it to be a choice, you know, and I don't want to feel like I'm, you know, addicted to it somehow or something. These are, you know me, I study things. So this might be 10% of what's track running for me, but, I try to study it, but definitely like I have good instincts. So it's like, you know, if, but Standing Rock, like, I was standing on that bridge. There's concussion grenades. Because at one point I realized, so I would hear the crash, and then there would be tear gas, and so I'd move away. And then at some point there was no more tear gas when I heard that loud boom, so I knew they were just throwing grenades into the crowd. And so, you know, but I have good instincts. Like, the first time I got tear gas, I just knew, like, I held my breath, and then as soon as I could, I started pushing the air out, and then someone later told me to do that, so I was like, okay, that's, you know, I have good instincts, but it's pretty bizarre. It's a weird feeling to just, like, be in that zone. But, you know, that night on the bridge, I felt more like I could just move in and out of it as I needed to, whereas Charlottesville, it was like we were dropped in, and there was almost just nowhere to go.
Right.
And also, I don't know, on the bridge it was like, it's like after Standing Rock, Pat was like, we need to get you a helmet. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. You know, like, there's just no more of this, like, oh, I'm just going to roll around here without, you know, it's just like, we need some serious safety gear. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how to compare them.
And then the cops shot. So that night they shot my press badge off, and that's when we decided to get bulletproof vests after that and ballistic grade respirators. But I guess another thing I would say is the difference between the two is that in Standing Rock, I mean, not counting the internal dynamics within the camp. And the differencing of, like, opinions and people wanting to do different tactics and so on and so forth. More or less, it was a two-way fight. You know, it was pretty much the camp versus the cops and the oil companies. Basically, it was like you're on one side or the other. You're for the pipeline or you're against the pipeline. With Charlottesville, it was a three-way fight. But it was kind of where the cops kind of did stuff to the Nazis, but let them get away with stuff for a while. But it was definitely like it was more of a three-sided fight, where, you know, you couldn't tell. You know, I also found it was interesting that certain liberals, I couldn't really tell what side they were on, if they were more about the cops or more about people wanting to fight the Nazis. But I mean, I saw footage from people that was, you know, people standing in between the line of Nazis and the 3%ers and, like, the anti-fascists, and just being, like, you know, trying to, like, you know, lovey, hippie, frou-frou stuff all over people, right, and, like, get everyone to calm down. And I literally watched, like, an older liberal woman say, I love you, to the Nazis. And I don't know why people think that's appropriate at this point to keep doing that, because they don't care. They just don't care about any of those things.
I think, too, for me with Standing Rock, like, even though I'm clearly, like, super down with people defending their water, defending land that they are living on that is theirs for a really long time, you know, so many levels of greed from the corporations and then the police just being so complicit with you know, all of it, but I sort of understand the sides. Like, the oil companies want money, people want jobs, you know, whatever that is, that bullshit thing, or they think there's going to be jobs, or they think there's going to be more jobs, or whatever that is, you know. I have some level of understanding somewhat where they're coming from. I don't know if I'm phrasing that correctly.
Like, you understand the dynamics.
Yeah,
of
it's
what's
like,
motivating people.
I know what I see when I look at the bigger picture, and I know what I feel in my gut is right and correct, and what you take a stand for and what you fight for, and what is bullying and what is taking, and, you know, I mean, all that. I get it and I see it, but I sort of understand where other people are coming from. With these motherfuckers, I try sometimes to understand where they're coming from, and it's so, like, painful in my brain, because it defies all logic. Like, there's no logic to it. there's no intelligence to it, even though there's some very intelligent people engaged in it. They don't seem, there doesn't seem to be like gain from it, except for some of the higher up people. Maybe there's levels of fame or money or whatever they think they can. But overall, it just seems like a miserable position to be in with little gain. And I try to understand it, and I just get more baffled, and then I just am like, I don't know. So it's just tricky. It just feels like this, I don't know what other word to use except some sort of evil, which I know has a lot of like religious connotations, so I don't like to use it that way. And then also just maybe, you know, just a lot of like just deep self-hatred is the only other thing, you know, that then like projects out into hatred of other people. And I don't try to analyze it too much as anything to make an excuse or to like see the other side or anything like that, because it just doesn't work that. But that's the difference to me of just like there's these opposing forces and people who are like taking a stand for themselves, and then there's this Nazi shit, which is just like, it just defies everything, and you can't, and people know that, but you just can't use the same trying to understand dynamics, because the only dynamic is power and oppression, and yeah, that's it, that's like the only dynamic there.
Yeah, it's like a, I guess I would describe it as like a dark kind of nihilism. You know, yeah. I think it's just like alienation and nihilism is at the root of a lot of that shit. But I also don't want to give those people a pass. I feel like in the past when I've thought about it, I've been like, oh, they're just trolling, they're just nihilists.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what, no. Walks like a Nazi, talks like a Nazi, it's a fucking Nazi.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for all your amazing work and for our collaborations at Unicorn Riot and, you know, and if people want to support your work and if they want to support Unicorn Riot, do you have individual Twitter page? You don't do that. Do you have individual? You just say go to Unicorn Riot.
Yeah, unicornriot.ninja. We have a support our work page. We take donations.
Yeah, we also take cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, too. Anyone wants to come off of that?
Hell yeah.
Love it.
But you won't accept. Do you accept donations from ANCAPs?
Yeah, we'll take a donation from ANCAPs.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, fascists, you may be surprised. In this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose. You fascists bound to lose.